This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome to The Scorecard.
Many doubted we'd ever see it.
Where we focus on Chicagoland and national golf news.
But here it is. The return to glory.
Can't help but think of the long one he made in San Diego to pick up his first PGA Tour win in style. Here it comes. Here it
watch out!
Comes!
And there's no doubt about it. The Bear has come out of hibernation.
With your hosts, Score golf expert and editor of Chicago District Golfer magazine, Barry Cronin.
Well, here it comes.
Oh, my goodness.
And Mike Esposito.
In your life have you seen anything like that?
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about in?
That is better than most.
Presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine on 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
And good morning, everybody, and welcome in to The Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine. It's been a few months since we talked to you last, six to be exact, mid-September, but we are glad to be back, and I would say it's the perfect weekend for that. I'm joined now. I'm Mike Esposito, joined by my friend and partner, Barry Cronin. Barry, the editor of Chicago District Golfer magazine. Barry, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. It's great to hear the dulcet tones once again. I can't believe 6 months is a long time.
I had to do math real quick there, Barry. September, mid-September was our last show last season, and because of the weirdness of COVID in 2020, we missed some stuff. We missed, you know, the Masters. We missed a Masters in there.
We missed the Masters in November, where Dustin Johnson won. And then we missed the U.S. Open, where Bryson DeChambeau kind of brought Winged Foot to its knees with his massive driving. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and so a lot's gone on since then. And, you know, for our local golfers, everybody was playing golf, obviously, last summer. And we had decent weather all the way into December. Mike, I played golf on December 22nd with my son, who was in to visit for Christmas. And, man, we never did that before. So we had a great golf season last year. So, and it's continued on to this year, you know, played earlier this week.
Yep.
So the weather's been good, all the last couple of days have been bad. But and now we're on Masters week, and, you know, it's perfect time to be back.
Yeah, and the two guys you mentioned there, as you were talking about the Masters 2020 from November, both storylines for different reasons in this year's Masters. We'll get to that in 1 second, Barry. Golf coverage on The Score presented by Sam Adams' Wicked Hazy IPA. I wanted to let everyone know that this is our first show of the season for The Scorecard presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine. We will be here through... Normally, it's through football season, so until football starts, you have us here every Saturday morning from 6 to 8. We'll talk about the best going on in the golf world, great guests, local interest, and we want to hear from you as well. Our Tech Zone, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. If you want to text us or call us, same number, 312-644-6767. We love hearing from you, so please... shout us out and let us know what you're thinking. We have a great show today. I'll get to the guests very quickly before we get back to the Masters, which is where we will spend most of today's show, certainly. At 6:20, we'll talk to Chris Olerking. He is the Director of Instruction at the Golf Practice 15-year PGA instructor. That will be our lesson tee for the day. At 6:40, we're happy to be joined by the executive director of Chicago District Golf Association, Robert Marchione. He will join us to talk about the CDGA and all the great things it does at 6:40. From Augusta, we'll talk to Bob Herrig, ESPN.com's golf writer, at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. Bob is down there covering the Masters. We'll find out everything that's going on, and you'll certainly get that from some of us throughout the course of the show. And then last but not least, I don't think I could say leastly, can I? Logan Keeter and Reese Wallace. We will have, I'm going to guess, Barry, our youngest ever guests on the scorecard. They are both 12. And yes, they will be joining us. You're asking, why are you having 12-year-olds on? Because they participated in the Drive, Chip, and Putt National Finals last Sunday, Easter, at Augusta for the boys and girls competition. So interesting stuff there. They were at Augusta 6 days ago participating. And we'll talk about the old Drive, Chip, and Putt National Finals. But, Barry, the Masters, as we mentioned off the top, certainly the storyline in our first show of the season. And we may as well start with Dustin Johnson, who won in December or in November and missed the cut now. So this is what Augusta does to you, right? It's you know, here you are with your winning score 5 months ago, and then, you know, back here April 2021, DJ misses the cut. Lots of big names missed the cut here.
A lot of names missed the cut, and as I think anybody who's been watching this, you know, for the last couple of days, have heard people say that the conditions of the golf course are totally different at this time of year in April than they were in November. Much softer in November, and on Thursday it was really a tough course. I think only 12 players were under par on Thursday. And I don't think Dustin was one of them. And then he didn't play very well yesterday, so he's out. And other past champions are out. Sergio Garcia, of course, he won a couple of years ago. Danny Willett, who won the year that Jordan Spieth imploded. Brooks Koepka, who had a bad injury on his knee. And poor Rory McIlroy. You know, I love the guy, and I think everybody loves Rory, and he just, you know, seems to come to Augusta and shoot 75 every time. This year it was 74. You know, if he would win Augusta, it would be he would have the career Grand Slam. So he just doesn't seem to be able to get it done around Augusta National for whatever reason. A couple of the old guys who always seem to make the cut but didn't this year, Fred Couples and Bernard Long, are both past champions. They're out. So, but we've got a lot of great guys who are in.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Mike, one thing about that leaderboard, if people would look at it and say, okay, well, we know who Justin Rose is. You know, he won the U.S. Open in 2013, and he finished second to both Spieth and Sergio at the Masters. So he's got a really good record, and so he's leading, and people get that. But then there's a few guys behind him. They go, well, who's this Will Zalatoris guy? Who's Brian Harman? Mark Leishman, he's kind of well known, and then you get to Spieth, we know him, and then you have some guy named Bernard Weisberger from Austria. So you know, it's kind of a little bit of a no name group there behind Rose.
But it's good fun though, and you know, we talked about how the course was playing. You talked about it Thursday. I mean, Rose was, you know, out and in front and way in front with the 65 on Thursday. And can he go wire to wire? I know that's only that's not something. I want to say Spieth is the only one who has done that, if I'm remembering correctly, take a first round lead and then win the tournament. He came back down to earth with a 72 yesterday. He still leads. So Rose at 7 under. You have Harman and Zalatoris, as you just mentioned, at 6 under, and then Spieth and Leishman at 5 under, and then a gaggle of guys at 4 and 3 under that are poised right there. But one of the other interesting things that I read was that outside of Tiger Woods, if you're not within you know, that top 12 there, you're probably not going to win. Tiger's the only one who's done that in recent memory. You know, if you're within five or six shots, you know, you have a chance. And if you're not, well, you probably don't. At least that's what history tells us.
Right. And right now, you know, and even if you narrow it down a little bit farther, Mike, right now, you know, there's 10 players within three shots of the lead. And we know anything could happen. You know, we've seen that. We saw that a few years ago. We see it every year. You know, guys mm-hmm. who are leading, you know, dump it in the water. Oh, like when Tiger won in 2019, you know, he was, there was a couple players right there with him, and you know, they dump it in the water on 12, and you know, and he goes on to win. So, yeah, anything can happen at Augusta. It's crazy. But you know, they had a little. I think it might have rained overnight there. They had a little moisture yesterday, so the course softened up, and more players, you know, got into the mix. You know, Rose had a four-shot lead going into yesterday, and mm-hmm. at the end he had a one-shot lead because he basically, you know, he shot even par. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so there's it's kind of wide open now, I think, for the at least for the top 10 guys, and maybe even farther down the line. I mean, you have guys like you mentioned at four under. Justin Thomas is you know, three shots off the lead. I mean, he played great yesterday. Mm-hmm. And how about this guy Will Zalatoris? Mm-hmm. He doesn't even have full status on the PGA Tour, if you can believe that. I looked him up on the PGA Tour website, and you know, you just sort of glance at it, and he has no FedEx Cup points. And you go, well, how could that be? You know, he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, 5 top 10 finishes playing this year, and he doesn't have any because he doesn't have status on the PGA Tour. He played this past year on the Corn Ferry Tour, which is the minor league tour everybody knows.
Yep.
Although it changes names every 5 or 10 years, but he wound up getting getting an exemption into the U.S. Open because he was in the top 10 on the Corn Ferry Tour because of the pandemic, the USGA did not have sectional qualifying or local qualifying. So he couldn't get in to the U.S. Open just by qualifying. So they said, all right, well, we're going to give the top 10 on the Corn Ferry Tour. We're going to let him into the U.S. Open. And then he finished tied for sixth at Wingfoot. So now that has gotten him a number of sponsor exemptions. And he went on to finish, he's finished seventh at Torrey Pines, eighth at in the Dominican Republic, 10th at Arnold Palmer Invitational, and he was tied for 15th at the LA Open at Riviera. So he's playing unbelievably. He's made almost $2.5 million, and you know, oh, and most importantly, because you know we're all about local. We're Chicago focused here on the score. He tied for second in the 2020 Evans Scholars Invitational at Chicago Highlands Golf Course Golf Club, located in Westchester. So there you go. You know, he was here just like in September, and he did that.
And that's why I think a lot of people have gravitated to him and are rooting for him. The story is great. You mentioned, I mean, this is a guy that played on the Corn Ferry Tour last year. He's kind of your unknown young kid coming up, and if you don't pay close attention, you've never seen nor heard of him before. But here he is, one shot off the leaderboard on moving day at the Masters. He's also buddies with, and we talked about this previously,
yeah.
But he's old pals with football's Tony Romo, apparently. We've got that going for him, too.
Right, and apparently Tony Romo had played golf with him a couple of years ago, and Zalatoris went to Wake Forest, but he's from Dallas. So I guess Tony had an opportunity to play a few rounds with Zalatoris, and at that time, Zalatoris was ranked, you know, world rankings. He was down in the 2000s. You know, he was so mm-hmm. far down. And I guess from what Jim Nantz said yesterday on the broadcast, Tony Romo told him, this kid's going to be one of the top players in the world in a couple of years. You watch. So Nantz and Romo were texting during the broadcast yesterday, and Romo is basically saying, Jim, I told you so, and I'm picking him to win the Masters. And of course, we know what a savant, you know, and Jim Tony Romo is. Mm-hmm. So who knows? He might be picking the winner. But you can't argue with the fact that the guy, When he was playing the Corn Ferry Tour, he hit 81% of his greens in regulation. This year on the PGA Tour, he's hitting 70% of his greens in regulation. So what that means is you're getting on the par fours in two, you're getting on the par threes in one, and you're getting on the par fives in three, probably two for him because he kills it. He hits it off. You know, he's getting on. So that's really tremendous because you're giving yourself a chance at making birdies, and that's how you succeed on the PGA Tour. So, you know, his ranking, which was in the 2000s when he played with Tony a couple of years ago, he's now 46th in the world. So he's slowly crawling up the world ranking leaderboard. So
it's just amazing, and it's obvious, right? That's why people gravitate to it. It's a great story. It's a guy who was scuffling. He was, you know, 2000. He was whatever he was. And then here he is all of a sudden. He's caught lightning in a bottle, and, you know, he's obviously very skilled, but he's playing out of his mind the last, what, 6-8 months? I mean, this is a great stretch for him, and he starts the day one shot back at the Masters on moving day. And you mentioned the weather earlier, Barry. High winds expected, and the potential, at least what the weather forecasters are saying, of some rain later this afternoon. So perhaps the guys who get out earlier would have an advantage there.
Well, yeah, depending on how windy it is, I think maybe the guys who play in the rain and in the moisture, the ball will hold a little bit better on the greens, yep, like it did in November. I mean, they just tore Augusta National apart because it was soft. And you saw Thursday where Augusta National said, we're not going to be soft this year. We're going to be hard. And the balls were bouncing all over the place, and the scores were relatively high. Hey, Mike, the one other guy I wanted to mention, which I think many of our listeners could relate to, including me. There's a guy named Siwoo Kim. He's a really good player. He's sort of an up-and-down player. He won the Players' Championship a couple of years ago, which is a great tournament. So Siwoo Kim missed a shot on the 15th hole at Augusta, right, the par 5, and he was on the green waiting to putt, and he was so mad that he broke the shaft. He was pounding the putter into the ground, and he broke the shaft of his putter. So for the final four holes of playing at Augusta, you know, he had a broken putter. He couldn't putt with his putter. So he decided to putt with his 3-wood. And he wound up parring all those final holes. So on the 16th hole is a par 3 and over water. So he hit it on the green, and then he 2-putted with his 3-wood. So it went... So it went 9-iron, 3-wood, 3-wood. That's the first combination of those clubs ever in the history of that hole, and they made a par. So, and meanwhile, the whole debate on TV. Oh, okay, yeah. So anyway, that was a cool thing. So good old Siwoo Kim.
For sure, and we'll get to more of that. We haven't really talked about Jordan Spieth. We will do that. We have to take a break. When we come back, Chris Olerking, director of instruction at the Golf Practice, will join us on our lesson tee. It's Barry Cronin. It's Mike Esposito. Welcome back. Our season debut of the Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine, here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
And we are back, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, the Scorecard presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine.
Georgia. Oh, yeah.
I don't even think Georgia. I should be interrupting this at all, Barry.
No.
But
let's just let it roll, man.
We're just going to let it roll. It is Masters Week, and
it
so
is.
We're down with Georgia on our mind here on the Scorecard. Barry Cronin, Mike Esposito, we're glad to be with you here. Our season kickoff of the Scorecard, and we will be here every Saturday morning from 6 to 8. Going through September, Barry, and As we sit here, we are pending Chris Olerking from the golf practice in Highland Park. We will talk to Chris as soon as we can get him. But it is Justin Rose's show. It has been for the last 2 days, although he came back down to earth yesterday. But Justin at 7 under par so far through the first two rounds of the tournament, leads by a shot over Brian Harman and Will Zalatoris, who we just kind of finished discussing his wonderful story and how he has ended up here in the second place on moving day at the Masters. And I mentioned Barry, Jordan Spieth, and we didn't get to a ton of Jordan, but here's a guy that I know last year when we were talking about Jordan, it was not the greatest of seasons for him. The guy was scuffling mightily, and he seems to have found himself.
Yeah, he was. I think he was just tied for 46th at the Masters in November, and he really, his record before that was just pretty abysmal. And even, okay, so if you look at, from September of last year, you know, he missed a cut at the U.S. Open. He missed another cut at the Safeway Open out in California. T38 at Shadow Creek, T41 at Sherwood, the Zozo. Missed the cut at Houston, T46 at the Masters, missed the cut at Torrey Pines. And that's it. That's January 31st. He missed the cut at Torrey Pines. Then Phoenix, T4, Pebble Beach, T3. Riviera, which is LA Open, Genesis, T15, Arnold Palmer Invitational, T4, Players, T48, kind of not his kind of golf course, and then at the Dell Match Play in Texas, he's T9, and then he wins the Texas Open, Valero Texas Open last week. So obviously, you know, everybody's been saying it and going, he's trending, Jordan's back, oh, it's great to have him back, and it is great to have him back. You know, it's been a long drought for him since 2017 when he won the British Open. And, you know, looks like he's back. So he'll be in contention this weekend. And, you know, he just seems to have, ever since he was young. I mean, he finished this first year playing at Augusta. He was, you know, he finished second to Bubba Watson. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he plays that course great, and of course he's got such a magnificent short game, and that course is all about the short game. You know, you got to be able to chip it and putt it and feel it, and he just sort of feels it, which is pretty cool. So it's going to be exciting to see him in the mix at on the weekend there.
It's awesome to have him back amongst the leaders, and it just goes to show you, you meaning you and I and everyone out there listening, that when you're out there scuffling on the course, and obviously we're not pros and we are not nearly as golf talented as Jordan Spieth, but for whatever reason, at some point, something just clicked, and all of a sudden he was back to being the Jordan Spieth we all love and root for and remember. And, you know, the difficulties of 2020 were behind him. And I'm sure he may have an idea of what it is and what propelled him to the successes he's having so far this year. But he may, you know, it's one of those things. And it just goes to show you how mental this game is in terms of, you know, the ability to master it and to improve your game and to kind of piece together how you're doing it, as opposed to just kind of out there wailing. And I'm told by Barry, our producer, Adam Studzinski, that we do have Chris Olerking now. He's the director of instruction at the golf practice, longtime PGA instructor out of Highland Park. He joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or at apnissan.com. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, Chris. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for taking time to join us here at the beginning of the golf season in Chicago. We had a couple of days there that were like really awesome. And yours truly actually went out and played golf. And I think it was golf. It was something resembling golf, swinging a club, hacking about. But so I wanted to call you and get you on the air, Chris, because I know you have an indoor facility that you work with people all winter, And but I kind of wanted to get an idea of what to do for those of us who've been in pandemic hibernation since last December and haven't been able to go south, to our palatial estates down in Naples or West Palm Beach.
Sure, sure. Well, there's definitely something about this time of year. You know, life outside is awakening. The courses are opening up. And, of course, the Masters always seems to be like an official kickoff to the season. I sort of see that, you know, you've got people who've been, you know, who've stayed in the Midwest and may have been practicing at domes or indoor facilities like ours. And then there's people that haven't really done much. And certainly for those who've been kind of hibernating, you know, the body and the swing will be rusty. Your swing speeds will be down and overall coordination will be. So, I mean, my recommendation for those people is really more just making swings every day at home, like 15 to 20 swings a day, thoughtful swings, and just to help get your mind and body in sync and organized. And I think without the distraction of the ball, you're most likely to be more productive.
Wow. So don't even hit a ball.
I know it's hard to imagine. It's something that we do with our students. Sometimes the ball just gets to be very distracting. And so I just think early in the season, when you're just trying to get reps and you're trying to, you know, you might have some swing cues that you're trying to accomplish. Usually it's more productive, hard to believe. I'm sure the driving range operators don't want to hear that, but I think that's a good start. And then, you know, for those people who've been working on their game, you know, to me, it's important to understand that, you know, the indoor practice experience, you know, has less stressors and stimulus to navigate through. So usually when outside for the first couple of rounds, you're trying to get acclimated to the turf and the conditions and the wind and the pressure and score. So it takes a few rounds. So you just have to be realistic with your expectations. Your skills are going to be rusty and your body's still waking up.
Talking with Chris Olerking, Director of Instruction at The Golf Practice. You could find them at thegolfpractice.com here on Swing Thoughts on the Scorecard. And Chris, with technology being what it is and you're trying to teach people the game, how much and how little do you incorporate technology when you're talking to a student, you know, be it a kid, be it a senior? Does it vary based on who your student is and what your technology usage is?
No, I would say all levels of experience and athleticism seem to do well with the technology. The technology is able to give feedback that's just very accurate. So as a golf instructor, your eye becomes trained to see things that maybe most people wouldn't be able to see. But you know, when you're talking about really small metrics of degrees and stuff like that, the technology is awesome. And it also does a great job of sort of illustrating for people what's happening, you know, at the moment of truth, at impact. And so it's something that we use with all of our students.
Chris, you look at the PGA Tour and these guys are at the highest level. They all have different swings. Do you think they all have different swings? They all look different to me. And do you think that each person that you see has a sort of a swing DNA that you, as an instructor, you can't really change that, right? You've sort of got to adapt your instruction to the DNA of each person's swing. You know, you have kids come in and they swing a certain way, right? And do you try to fit them in? Okay, you have to swing like Ben Hogan or you have to swing like Tiger or whatever. Or do you have to, you know, or do you, like, if you had Bubba, would you just let him go crazy?
Yeah, I think so what you're talking about is, you know, form versus function. And so if somebody has a move that's very functional, therefore it produces repeatable, consistent results, then they're able to make, you know, Bubba's able to make his action work and it's repeatable. And so you would say that you wouldn't mess with his form. If we have somebody that comes in who's very athletic, a younger person who has a lot of time on their hands and has high, lofty goals, well, then you're going to try to develop their form or their technique to a place that's going to allow them to play at the level they want to play with. So So as an instructor, and that's part of why I love golf instruction, is, you know, it's really a puzzle that you've got people that have various golf experiences, various levels of athleticism, and different goals and different body types. And so you have to sort of be able to work with all of that to help create a plan for that player.
Yeah, and if somebody's old and decrepit and with no athleticism, et cetera, would you just have them go to the putting green and work on that? Or what do you do? I mean, because I saw Brian Harman, 2014 John Deere Classic champion, Brian Harman, now in second place at the Masters. He said, you know, he basically doesn't hit it very far anymore. I mean, you know, sure. He probably hits it 290 or 280 or whatever it is off the tee, which is a long way for us. But on tour, it's nothing. So he said, you know, I just sort of, I've sort of defaulted to what I'm good at, which is putting and short game. And if you look at Spieth, you know, the same way, he doesn't hit it long. He 297 average off the tee. But the short game and the putting, it seems to be really where it's at. And when I look around, I go, well, nobody practices that.
Well, Barry, I would love to help you.
Well, I'm a lost cause, you know. I'm a hit it and hope kind of guy.
I love working with guys who are trying to break 100. I love working with people who are trying to break 70.
Well, it's not that bad.
No, I would say that if you've got limited time to work on your golf game, then you have to look at the areas that are going to provide the greatest benefit. And so putting and chipping and wedging around the green, say 40, 50 yards and in, you have a lot of those strokes in an 18-hole round. And so getting yourself to be more sharp with lag putting and better within 5 feet, and just getting the ball on the green from difficult situations, just getting the ball on the green, that's going to save you strokes. If that's what your goal is if it's a scoring goal, then that's where I would spend your time. And then if you're trying to play, competitively, then you've got to look at more of the other aspects, but then you'd have more time to work on it.
Chris, we really appreciate you jumping on for a few minutes this morning. Again, if people want to find you, thegolfpractice.com. I see you're on Twitter also, at Chris Olerking. We really appreciate it. Good stuff this morning. And I am one of those guys that will struggle to break 100. So I can use that assistance at your convenience, my friend.
Great. Well, nice to be with you guys.
All right. Thank you, Chris. That's Chris Olerking, Director of Instruction at the Golf Practice out in Highland Park. It's a sweet facility, Barry. You could visit the website and check all of it out. And Chris is a nice guy and obviously knows what he's talking about. So good to have him on the show. We are up against the clock, Barry. We'll talk plenty more Masters throughout the show, including at the top of the 7 o'clock hour with Bob Herrig, who's down in Augusta covering it for ESPN.com. Coming up next, though, it's the Executive Director of Chicago District Golf Association, Robert Marchione, will join us. We're excited to have Robert on here on The Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine on 670 The Score. And we are back on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Barry Cronin, Mike Esposito here with you on The Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine. Barry,
that was Gladys Knight and the Gladys Knight and the Pips, Midnight Change in Georgia. Come on.
I was just going to say, I love all of the various Georgia music that we have picked out. One of our little things that we like to do here on The Scorecard is play the music of where we're playing this weekend. And, of course, Augusta, Georgia is the location. We heard Ray Charles, and now we've got Gladys Knight. And it's all
with
good.
With the Pips. That's with when the Pips were still around. You never leave out the Pips, my friend.
I should not do that. We jump on out now, Barry, to the Alpamonte Nissan hotline. Alpamonte Nissan is in Melrose Park on North Avenue or at apnissan.com. We are pleased to be joined by the Executive Director of Chicago District Golf Association, Robert Marchione, joins us. Good morning, Robert.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Good morning, Robert. Thanks for being on. You know, one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on today was, you kind of have the overview of everything that's gone on in golf in the last year. And obviously, you know, with 400 clubs and 80,000 members in the CDGA, we had a really unusual year that turned out to be, it was a terrible year, you know, for the country and everything with the pandemic. but it, you know, always good things come out of bad things, and it seemed like golf is the really great, a lot of great things happened in golf. So give us a little overview of that, if you would.
Yeah, you know, it was a really roller coaster year. When the pandemic hit in last March, everything started to shut down. We just weren't sure what was going to happen with golf, let alone what was happening with the world. And there were clubs that were asking us what we thought. Some said that, you know, if we can't open up fairly soon, we're probably never going to open again. So there was a lot of uncertainty. And moving into April last year, you know, about a year ago this time, everything was still shut down. Got into May, and the courses were open on a very restricted basis, groups of two every 15 minutes. And even then, courses were saying that really doesn't help us very much. By the time we got to June and moved into toward the end of June, especially phase fours, which we're in now, golf just took off. People, I think, realized that there's a natural social distancing to the game, and the ability to be outside exercising both physically and, you know, mentally and emotionally. It gave people something to do that was what they're used to, some normalcy, and being with family and friends. So from June on, and as you said, Barry, it's a terrible reason, but from June on, the game just was as popular as it had been in the last 20 years. And by the time we got to the end of the year, some of the courses that were worried about ever opening were looking at it and basically saying, boy, we're looking for a day off. come December, maybe, you know, we won't mind seeing some snow. So the game was rediscovered and discovered by individuals last year, and it drove the participation numbers through the roof. And again, it was a terrible reason why it happened. But the silver lining, I think, for a lot of people was the game last year.
All right. And so who played last year, Robert? I mean, who were the new people that played, or the people who rediscovered the game? Where did you find that increasing?
Across the board, starting with the youth. You know, we have a youth on course program, and those numbers far exceeded the previous year, both in the number of memberships and how many rounds they were playing. And this was private clubs, public courses, Chicago, suburban, downstate, didn't make any difference. The rounds were up in all categories across all of the clubs. So this wasn't just one particular group. This was everybody that has access to the game seemed to be playing it. And even some of the resorts, while there was not a lot of air travel going on, resorts in the Midwest also reported that their tee sheets were full. So people were willing to drive. Maybe they weren't comfortable getting on an airplane, but they were definitely willing to drive. So last year, that last half, it was didn't make any difference where the course was or the age of the person or anything else. The categories were up across the entire board.
Robert Marchione is our guest, the executive director of the Chicago District Golf Association, here on The Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine on The Score. Robert, you mentioned the Youth on Course program, and I was going to ask you about that. Being the dad of three little kids and two boys, and not that my daughter is not interested, but one of my boys distinctly is interested in getting out there and learning how to play. How does that work, and how do you sign up? I know the website is cdga.org, but how else would you get signed up for that?
That's one way to do it. You can also do it through the Illinois Junior Golf Association. But if you go to our website, be able to find the information, and you can sign up the youngsters. And once they're signed up, they can play more than 50 public courses in the Chicago area for $5 or less at certain times during the week. So it's really a good program. Started in Northern California. It's spread out now throughout the entire country. It gives youngsters a chance to play, again, for $5 or less. And then our foundation will reimburse the course for the difference in the price. So if their normal junior fee is $10, let's say, the junior will pay $5 when they go out to play, and our foundation reimburses the other $5. So it gives young boys, young girls an opportunity to go out, play the game, and learn everything about the game, the positive attributes of it. It gives the course an opportunity to fill some times that maybe in the past they haven't filled, although last year there wasn't too much of an issue. And it allows our foundation to provide funding to the next generation playing the game. So it's a program that really is positive for everybody involved.
Yeah, that's great. That's really a great program, because having had a son who was into golf, you know, you realize, you know, it can be a very expensive sport if you're paying, you know, full boat for them to, you know, hit balls and go out and then go out and play a golf course. If you're not a, you know, a country club member where all that's, you know, you cover that up front, it gets to be a lot of money for the average blue collar person.
Mm-hmm.
So, Robert, we had all this success last year, you know, great numbers, up 20% nationwide for golf, et cetera. So what's going to happen this year? You know, we're slowly getting back. The vaccine's coming. I see people driving in their cars and they don't have their masks on, which is awesome. And, you know, what's going to happen this year? Are we going to be able, how much of this boom, how many of these golfers are we going to be able to retain? And what are facilities doing to retain them?
Two good questions. The first one, what is this year going to be like? Naturally, the crystal ball is going to tell us, but the crystal ball is not very clear, so nobody's really sure. But from what we're seeing, the early numbers are showing that golf will remain strong. Now, will it remain as strong as it did at the end of last year? As you said, all the other activities come back, and maybe some of the things that people were not able to do last summer, they'll be able to do this summer. So what will happen to the participation rate? Our guess right now is that it's still going to be a pretty strong demand, but maybe not as strong as last year. We're thinking it's going to be more than it was in 2019, the last year before the pandemic, but maybe not. The numbers will not be quite as high as they were from June on of last year. But so many people discovered the game or rediscovered it that we do believe there will be a residual of that, that the bump we saw last year, there will still be somewhat of a bump, but maybe not to that 20% level. But in looking at it again, the key component was individuals found out that they could play this game safely. It's a multi-generational game. You know, children could play it with parents and grandparents. It's outdoors. So that positive aspect we think will continue, and we'll still see a little bit of increase from what we saw in 2019. The courses themselves, public or private, you know, a lot of them started to adapt over the years. As society changed and technologies changed, the courses realized they had to adapt. And maybe it's things like the dress code wasn't as strict, or having a game room, or, you know, 9-hole events. So courses started to adapt prior to the pandemic. What the pandemic maybe brought to the forefront is an acceleration of that. Family activities, non-golf activities, you know, movie nights, camp-out nights, different things like that. So while courses were slowly changing what they were doing prior to the pandemic accelerated it. And I think that's another reason why we saw such a huge spike, that the golf course wasn't just somewhere to go hit golf balls, but it became somewhere where the family could do something together. And it involved more than golf. So that part will probably continue. And the combination of the family activity and the golf courses becoming more family-friendly were two of the reasons why the numbers spiked.
Right. And, you know, Robert, there were certain restrictions that were pandemic-type restrictions. So for the average person who's out playing golf, you know, you couldn't touch the flagstick. They took the rakes out of the bunkers. And to me, the best thing that ever happened was they took the rake out of the bunker, because not only I hit the ball in the bunker a lot, as our listeners know. and you know, so you go in the bunker, you have to find the rake before you go in there. And who knows where the rake is? You never know. Could be on the other side of the green. You don't know. And then you got to go in, you hit the ball. Of course, it goes back in the bunker if you're me. And then you finally get out, and now you got to rake the thing. But I think the fact that there's no rakes in the bunker, it's like that's like a liberating thing. It was great. Are they coming back?
That's also a good question. you know, the bunkers were designed originally as a way to, I hate to use the word penalize, but you're not supposed to hit it in the bunker. And if you hit it in the bunker, you weren't supposed to get a perfect lie. But you know, when you watch TV and the pro tours and everything else, you see the bunkers are pristine. So pro hits it in the bunker, they get a good lie, they hit it out just like they're on grass. So we've come to expect good lies in bunkers, but they were there to penalize people. So as you said, when the rakes were removed last year, it brought that aspect back in a little bit. You hit it in there, you weren't getting a perfect lie. And some people expected it, but that's not the way the game was designed. So it brought an element back, a design element back for that was put in the game many, many years ago. Now, whether the bunker rakes will come back is a good question. We don't think it'll be a safety issue at some point, and it might not be now. I think some of the studies, as we've learned more about COVID, said it's really difficult to catch it from a flag stick or a bunker rake or that type of thing. But from the maintenance standpoint, will bunker rakes return? I think some clubs will be under pressure to do that from the players. But as you said, without rakes there, it's a little bit easier to maintain the golf course. You're not having to move those things around. Some people maybe didn't use the rakes properly anyhow. So, you know, are they going to come back? Yes, I think many courses will put them back. But will every course put them back? There might be some that hold out at the beginning of the year and say, hey, let's see how it goes. You know, you hit it in the bunker and you ask a person to use their foot to smooth it out when they're done. So in a sense, it was returning to the roots of the game, and that is there is no rakes for the bunkers. But I think the golfers will determine it and see what happens. But, yeah, there will probably be some golf courses early in the year that say, you know, we're just going to keep the rakes out and let's see what happens.
Hey, Robert, last thing for you as we're up against the break, but the CDGA does tons of great stuff. And you mentioned we've talked about several of the things with the youth program and the handicaps and everything else. For people who are interested in joining, how would they go about doing that?
A couple ways. Going to our website, www.cdga.org is probably the best way to do it. They can also go to the golf course and ask there, and they can guide them through the process. But our website's become extremely popular over the years, get millions of page views each year. So that's probably the best way to do it. And they can sign up now and participate in our first event, which will be Friday, April 23rd at Glenview Park, a CDGA member appreciation day. So that'll kick off our season, and we're looking forward to it.
Yep, I'm looking at the website right now, and it is a great site for members. And if you're looking for it, cdga.org is the place to go. Robert Marchione, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much.
Guys, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Robert.
Robert is the executive director of Chicago District Golf Association, and we are back here on the scorecard in a few minutes. When we come back, we will talk Masters with Bob Herrig. He's down in Augusta covering the Masters for ESPN.com, and Bob joins us next. It's Barry and Mike here on The Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine on 670 The Score.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.